I'd prefer not to stay here.
All right.
I'll go now. I can find my way out.
With a final bow to the Jedi Masters, Jag turned, correctly, Luke noted, despite the many twists and turns the walk had taken them through, toward the temple's main entrance, and strode away, pulling his hood up as he walked. Returning to the temple from a late errand, Jaina passed the lone Jedi performing guard duty at the building's wide-open main entrance and walked into the main corridor. Just leaving was a man wrapped up in a dark cloak. He kept to the left side of the corridor, away from her, not even appearing to notice her. She hesitated as they came abreast of each other. His upright posture, military bearing, and the unconscious arrogance of his stride causing bells to sound in her memory. When he was one step past her, she stopped and turned her head to look at him. Jag? He stopped too, but did not turn. His face remained completely hidden within the folds of his hood. But it was Jag Fel's voice that answered.
Yes? Were you just going to walk past, not even say hello?
Yes. And then he was gone, swallowed up by the Coruscant night beyond the doors.
Jindine System, Tendranto Refueling and Repair Station.
Hands on hips, Han stood in the lounge of the vehicle now parked alongside the Millennium Falcon.
You've got to be kidding.
If you'll forgive me, Captain Solo, Master Calrissian's vocal mannerisms, though laced with humor, do not suggest that his basic thesis was in jest.
Han glared at the gold-toned protocol droid, then returned his attention to his surroundings. The lounge was, if not a thing of beauty, a testimonial to obsessive detail. The walls and ceiling were covered by thick, velvety material in a dark blue that matched the deep carpet on the floor. Silver glowrod housings, polished to a dazzling level of reflectivity, protruded at tasteful intervals from the walls and ceilings. Furniture included four comfort couches, each with ceiling-mounted, semi-transparent privacy curtains that would glide into position or retract at the touch of a button. Controls for the couch's temperature and vibration settings were mounted on silver panels inset in the velvet walls. Leia, beside Han, nodded.
It's even more crass than the Lady Luck.
Lando, facing them from across the room to view their first reactions to the pleasure pit, smirked.
She's a bit like the Lady. An older model, a Soro Sub 2400 yacht.
What's her name?
Leia asked. Lando modulated his voice to its richest, most seductive tones.
The Love Commander.
He stretched out the word love, an exercise in mockery. Leia looked at him as though he could not possibly be telling the truth. At his confirming nod, she put her hands over her mouth, the better to restrain any laughter that might emerge. Han shook his head.
I don't want to say what I think of her as a vehicle, but as a disguise, she's perfect.
He pulled his left arm from its sling and flexed his hand experimentally. Several weeks' worth of medical treatment since he sustained the injury and a good night's sleep had improved his condition somewhat, and his manner suggested he would soon be his old fighting self.
Let's move our gear from the Falcon to the master cabin, he told Leia.
Lando shook his head.
No, you're in the biggest of the guest cabins. I'm in the master cabin.
They both looked at him.
You're coming along?
Leia asked.
After due consideration, it seems to me that you'll be a lot more anonymous as my pilot and navigator. Me being Beskadoff Derman, hollow entertainment mogul and pleasure seeker of the corporate sector. Rather than the faces the authorities see whenever they establish communications with the Love Commander, right?
Well, Leia considered, that's true. But I don't look forward to Tendra tracking us down and killing us if we get you hurt.
She'll be glad to get me out of the home for a while. She knows how twitchy I've been lately.
Lando picked up his cane and twirled it theatrically.
Come on, nameless crew. Let's get to it.
Han clapped C-3PO on his metal shoulder.
Goldenrod, you get the most important mission of all. You stay here and record every single thing they do to the Falcon during repairs. And try not to talk to them while you're doing it.
Oh, dear.
An hour later, personal possessions moved aboard and pre-flight checklists completed, Han, sitting at the navigator's console, was a bit more favorably disposed toward the Love Commander. Despite the yacht's name and pleasure-oriented mission, despite her swirly, mood-altering sky blue and green exterior paint job, the vehicle wasn't a bad choice for their current needs. At 50 meters, she was nearly twice the length of the Falcon, but didn't mass much more, having a long, sleek design with two outrigger propulsion pods, one on either side, each carrying sublight ion drive and hyperdrive components. The hyperdrives were nothing special, but the ion drives had been rebuilt and overbuilt, giving the yacht considerable speed in sublight situations. Nor was she unarmed, though at first glance it appeared she was. A pop-up turret hidden beneath an artfully concealed access plate on the top hull held a turbo laser. At the bow beneath the bridge was a concussion missile port hidden behind a false dish in a sensor array. And the yacht did have shields, though the shield generator, appearing to be an auxiliary hatch, lay folded down against the top hull when not in use, and would take a few seconds to raise into position and become active. Now, with Leia in the pilot's seat, at Lando's insistence, since Han was not yet fully healed, and Lando in the oversized, preposterously comfortable captain's chair at the rear of the command cabin, the Love Commander lifted ponderously from her berth, backed on repulsor lifts away from the Falcon, and slid stern first into vacuum.
"Where to, Navigator?" Lando asked, activating his chair's massage vibration. "Someplace interesting, I hope." "Should be interesting enough."
Han finished putting their course into the nav computer.
"Corellia. We're going to zip through the exclusion zone, laughing at the Alliance picket vehicles trying to blow us up. Then we're going to drop down to the planet's surface, determine whether Prime Minister Dur Gedjan was acting alone when he ordered the hit on Tenel Ka. Which probably means beating a confession out of him, and then deciding whether to forgive him or kidnap him and his co-conspirators and bring them to justice."
"Oh?" Lando asked.
"What do we do on day two?"
Despite himself, Han snorted, amused.
"We'll figure something out."
"Well, wake me when we get there, whatever your name is."
Empty space. Engine compartment of the Durocrod.
Captain Uran Levint lay on the grimy Durasteel deck, half propped up against an almost equally grimy wall, and waited to die. Her tools lay scattered on the deck, along with the deck plates she had pulled up, plates that gave her access to the various components of the Durocrud's hyperdrive. The only sounds to be heard were her own breathing and the distant rhythmic noises made by the ship's life support system. Levint knew it would take her a long time to die. The Durocrud would continue to provide breathable air for weeks. The stores of food and water would run out first, in a few days. She'd have plenty of time to record and transmit a few final messages. One would denounce Jason Solo for his treachery. One would confirm that her will, on file with an advocate's office on remote Tatooine, did accurately record her final wishes. Then she'd die of thirst. Or, if she chose to end her suffering faster, she could shoot herself or step out an airlock. But one thing she could be sure of. Given the remote, untraveled nature of the spot she'd chosen for her first hyperspace jump, no cargo vessel or fast-moving courier would ever chance upon her. And her last transmissions, traveling at the speed of light, would take 8 years to reach the nearest star. She was as alone and doomed as anyone in the universe could be.
"Delicious, isn't it?"
The voice was female and came from outside the meager light provided by Levint's glow rods. Levint jerked upright. "Who's there?"
"Your suffering, we mean,"
the voice continued.
"You suffer like a child who cries herself to sleep each night, knowing that her parents will never, ever understand. How long has it been since you were that child?"
Levint rose on shaky legs and began to edge her way back to the door out of this compartment. She reached the doorway, found the light control by touch, and activated it. The overheads came on, bright, blinding her. And then, as her eyes adjusted, she saw her visitor. And she knew she was not crazy, because her accumulated experiences and neuroses would never concoct a being like the one she saw. Her visitor was a blue Twi'lek woman, of no unusual size. She was dressed in a dark traveler's robe and black clothes. Her features were pretty,
but she had obviously been the victim of catastrophe at some point in her life. Her left shoulder was lower than her right, with her left arm hanging in such a way that Levent suspected it was non-functional, and her right headtail had been severed at about the halfway point.
"Who are you?"
"We are Alima."
"Alima, and what are you doing here?"
"We are a stowaway."
Levent stared at Alima for a few moments more, and then it happened. The laugh came bubbling out of her like a high-pressure Santa spray steam. The laugh became a painful howl. It shook her and kept coming.
"Why do you laugh?"
"Because you're the worst stowaway in galaxy history."
Levent straightened.
"Because you picked the worst possible ship to stow away on. The hero of the Galactic Alliance sabotaged my hyperdrive."
"We know this. We watched his agents do it."
That snapped Levent out of her manic mood.
"You watched it?"
"Yes."
"And got on board anyway?"
"Yes."
Alima smiled.
"No, we do not wish to die. We stowed away after making sure of what the agents had done, and after acquiring the parts needed to repair the drive."
Levent took an involuntary step forward.
"You can fix it?"
"Yes. Though we will only fix it if you are dead. But if you and we come to terms, you will live and you will repair the drive."
"What are your terms?"
"You help us find the parents of that hero of the Galactic Empire. You act as a public face for us in that search. You do not reveal our presence to the authorities. You do not attack or unnecessarily endanger us. You are one of the smugglers, yes? You use your knowledge of smuggling to help in this search."
She furrowed her brow for a moment, then relaxed.
"You treat us as an esteemed paying passenger."
"And once you've found the Solos?"
"You will have fulfilled your obligation."
Coruscant, Jedi Temple Vehicle Hangar.
It wasn't a large number of starfighters, less than a full squadron's worth. 9 X-Wings, 1 E-Wing, but they were all beautifully maintained. And Jag Fel felt an unexpected pang as he looked at them. It seemed so long ago that flying craft like these had been his whole life. He missed that. He missed belonging to a band of comrades, divided by individual needs and peculiarities and prejudices, but united in their goals and their support for one another. He let none of what he was feeling reach his face. "The Jedi Order would like to fund and support your mission," Luke Skywalker was saying. That snapped Jag's attention back to the present.
"To find and destroy Ali Marar?"
he said. "To find and neutralize Ali Marar," Luke corrected. "Yes, obviously it might entail killing her, but should an opportunity arise to capture her, transport her back here."
"So that she might be convinced to see the error of her ways?"
Jag let just a hint of mockery enter his voice. "No, so that she might find her own path to redemption." Jag considered.
"I accept,"
he said.
"Good. I'm actually heading up a similar unit, pursuing leads involving the Sith Lady Lumaya. She may be dead now, or maybe not, but what's clear is that she was in alliance with Alima as of a few days ago, when they ambushed me and Mara. Now that it's clear that Lumaya was or is employing agents, and who some of them are, we stand an improved chance of finding her trail."
"I don't know much about her. I assume the term Sith Lady doesn't bode well." "Not well at all. I'll get you the basic information on her." Luke reached into a pocket and handed items over to Jag. "Identicard. It identifies you as Jagged Fell, a civilian specialist employed by the Jedi Order. The second one's a cred card. It gives you access to a drawing account set up for your task force. The third is a security card with what you need to assume control of," he pointed, "that X-Wing. Sorry I can't provide you with a Chiss Clawcraft."
"That's all right. I'm fond of X-Wings as well."
"I also want to assign a couple of Jedi to you. You're hunting a dark Jedi. You'll benefit from having Jedi with you."
"I agree."
Luke glanced toward a door leading into the hangar. "Speaking of which..." He must have been alerted by an impulse in the Force,
for when Jag followed his glance, the door was shut. But now it slid up and open, and a woman in brown Jedi robes walked into the hangar.
Uncle Luke, you wanted to see...
Oh.
Jag refrained from stiffening. It was Jaina Solo. His mind clicked through a number of possibilities and arrived at one inescapable conclusion. That she was going to be...
I'm putting together a small task force to find Aleem Arar, Luke said. Colonel Fell here is in charge. I'm assigning you to it and Zek when he's fit to fly.
Jaina came to a stop a few meters away, looking between the two men as if still expecting the punchline to a joke that already wasn't funny.
That is not a good idea. I don't think I can operate as this man's subordinate.
Luke gave her a quizzical look.
Back in the Yuuzhan Vong War, though he outranked you, he didn't offer you any grief about being your subordinate.
I'll leave you two to get caught up.
Jag, please get me a plan of operation at your earliest opportunity. He turned and headed toward the door. Jag waited until Luke was out of hearing.
The problem with Jedi Masters, he said, is that they can't be beaten with impunity.
Jaina looked at him suspicious.
Jag, did you just make a joke?
No.
He clamped down on the answer rising within him.
He knows why I wouldn't want to work with you, and he has decided to disregard my wishes. I'll have to assume that his reasoning is sound, whatever it is, until proven otherwise. All right, let's do some strategic planning.
Why wouldn't you want to?
Jaina was clearly confused, and so far as Jag could tell, possibly hurt as well.
Because of what happened with the Dark Nest?
It doesn't matter. We have planning to do.
He gestured toward the door. She stood her ground, glaring.
It does matter. If I'm going to be working in a hostile environment, I need to know why. If we have a problem, you should have told me about it years ago.
I couldn't. The words, heated, snapped out of him. I was stranded on Tanupe for 2 years, and because of your actions, ignoring the consequences of freeing Mobaka and what he did subsequently, I am now barred from my family forever. And that is the why.
Corellian Exclusion Zone aboard the Love Commander.
I feel, Lando announced, like an idiot.
He studied himself in the main display screen serving the captain's chair on the Love Commander control cabin. Mounted on a swing-out arm so that it could be positioned directly before him or moved out of the way, it was now beside his chair and switched off. Reflective when not active, it showed him in his new guise, wearing a white beard and mustache and a white wig with hair so long that the braid swinging from it would reach to his thighs when he stood.
But you look magnificent, Leia said.
Oh, I know that. Not even the wig could downgrade me to just startlingly handsome.
Shrugging, Lando swung the display screen completely out of the way. He affixed Han with a stern stare.
Navigator, aheading.
Han returned his glare. He'd had to go to a greater extreme to disguise himself. Without a beard, he looked like Han Solo. With one, he looked like his cousin, Thrakken Sal Solo, the late Corellian president. Some more significant efforts were called for. He'd sprayed all exposed areas of skin with a cosmetics compound that turned him a yellowish hue, and the spiky black halves of his false mustache, had they continued up to his nose, would have made a perfect chevron.
Same as it was 5 minutes ago, Captain, he said. Straight toward Corellia, straight from Coruscant, along the most heavily patrolled corridor throughout the exclusion zone.
Good, good. Lando nodded benignly. I'm glad you haven't managed to file up in 5 minutes.
Han flexed his shoulder experimentally.
When I'm better, I'm gonna throttle you.
Leia smiled and turned back to her control board. She was the least dramatic looking of the three. Dressed in a dumpy brown jumpsuit padded here and there to make her less visually interesting to male observers, wearing makeup that diminished her beauty rather than enhancing it, her hair in a nondescript style and tucked up into her cap. She was unexceptional in every way. Then, as her attention fell on the sensor screen, her eyes brightened. We have an incoming blip. No telemetry yet, except that it's bigger than a starfighter, smaller than a capital ship. She patched the comm board through the overhead speakers.
Incoming craft, this is Spinnerfish, Galactic Alliance 2nd Fleet. Cut your sublight engines and identify yourself immediately.
At Lando's nod, Leia killed the ion thrusters. Lando swung out his display screen again and activated it. Before him was the image of a young man, crisply attired in an Alliance Fleet Lieutenant's uniform. He was clean-shaven, his face angular, his manner stern, official. Behind him were cockpit chairs arranged in a configuration Lando recognized.
Armed shuttle, he told himself. Don't we rate at least a Corvette?
But he put on his friendliest smile and modulated his voice into its richest tones.
Hello, I'm Biscott Ofderman, master of the private yacht Love, Commander. What's a spinnerfish?
The lieutenant opened his mouth as if to answer, looked confused for just a fraction of a second, and thought better about responding.
Love, Commander, you are entering restricted space. You have to turn around and depart the Corellian system.
Oh, no, son. I'm here for at least a month. I'm here to gamble.
Gamble, sir? What is your planet of origin?
That would be Coruscant.
Then you have to be aware that the Galactic Alliance and the Corellian system are currently in a state of war.
You don't say. What has that got to do with gambling?
It means you can't visit.
Son, I don't see that gambling has anything to do with anything. My gambling in Corellia won't alter the course of the war 1 millimeter. I mean, it's not as though I had a bunch of smuggling compartments filled with Bacta or offers of aid from Commodore, is it?
The lieutenant's mouth worked for a moment. Then he said,
Love, Commander, prepare to be boarded and inspected.
Lando smiled agreeably.
Now that's the kind of thing I like to hear. Decisiveness. Crew, activate the top airlock and prepare to be boarded.
The lieutenant and two security officers came aboard. Han took the security men on a tour of the yacht, while the lieutenant came to the control cabin, his data pad in hand and questions on his mind. He sat in the navigator's seat while Leia pretended to ignore him.
Captain Ofderman, do you know what the penalties are for offering aid and comfort to the enemy in a time of war?
I imagine they're pretty harsh, Lando said. Good thing we're not doing that.
Good thing we're not doing that, Leia quietly echoed, making a small gesture with two outstretched fingers.
So it's a good thing you're not doing that, the lieutenant said.
He checked an item off on his data pad.
No, Lando continued. What we're actually doing is something else. Something vital to the Alliance's war effort.
Vital, Leia said. The lieutenant nodded, earnest, interested.
Vital?
So we have to get to Corellia.
So we have to get to Corellia.
Well, you obviously have to get to Corellia, then.
Lando shrugged.
But how?
The lieutenant thought about it.
Well, it's a pity you don't have any of the access codes provided by intelligence that would allow you to fly right in.
Oh, that would be handy.
Lando fixed the lieutenant with what he hoped was an honest look.
Do you have a lot of those recorded on your shuttle, son?
The lieutenant laughed.
I can't tell you, sir.
Of course you can, Leia said.
Of course I do.
Why don't you just give us one, then?
Why don't you just give us one, then?
The lieutenant nodded.
That would solve everyone's problem, wouldn't it?
Lando smiled.
It sure would.
The lieutenant rose.
I can't just transmit that sort of information. I'll go download it from our bridge computer and give you a data chip. How does that sound?
Sounds wonderful.
Star System MZX-32905, near Bamil.
Today it was to be makeup. Good old-fashioned powders and pigments and pseudo-skin appliances. Lumaya sat before a brightly lit mirror and got to work. It was painful, of course. Not long ago, Luke Skywalker had shot her 5 times with a blaster. 2 of those shots had hit prosthetic limbs, with simulated pain that could be switched off instantly, and damage that could be repaired within minutes. But 3 of those shots had found meat. And despite the fact that she healed at an unnaturally high rate, both from force-based healing trances and from the alterations made to her body decades earlier by the science of Emperor Palpatine, she was far from recovered. She hurt. And that was why it was to be makeup today. When trying merely to hide her scarred features, she normally wore an identity-concealing scarf wrapped around her lower face. She could bring up the force illusion of normal features if obliged to reveal herself. but distracted as she now was by injuries, her control might slip, allowing viewers a glimpse of the real features beneath. Properly applied pseudoskin didn't slip. When she was done, she appeared to be a woman of 30, roughly half her true age, and to possess the beauty and many of the racial stock characteristics of a woman of the Hapes Consortium. She drew on the force to dull her pain while she rose and dressed in a green gown and matching neck scarf, both overlaid with a webwork of gold thread and altogether too much sapphire jewelry, all appropriate to a wealthy Hapen woman. Dressed, she looked at herself in the mirror again, ensuring that the makeup had endured. Ready and confident, she gave herself a nod and then marched into the next room. It was a hemispherical holocom chamber. The central area, essentially a studio-quality stage, was surrounded by a ring of holocams that together would sample a three-dimensional image. Lumaya's servant droids had set up the central area with a chair that plausibly looked like a marble throne. Lumaya knew it to be foam plas, covered in a beautiful mottled green and white veneer, and a matching side table. On the table was a bowl of peeled, oversized grapes. She sat carefully on the throne and sampled one of the grapes. It was gummy, nasty, not a true grape at all, but a candy-like material produced by an ancient food fabricator that had been new when this station was built. The chrono above the main comm board counted down the last few seconds remaining to her. As it neared zero, she said, "Contact 339. Lights above the holocams flared up, bathing her in brightness, and the holocom unit activated with a surge of noise resembling the engine startup sound of a well-tuned high-performance speeder. The disembodied voice of the system computer, male and pleasant, said,
"Contact."
A moment later it added,
"The target system is acknowledging. They are receiving."
The computer's voice would be electronically scrubbed from the audio signal being sent. No return hologram appeared before Lumaya. The target was receiving, but not yet responding. After nearly 30 seconds, a hologram materialized before her. The image of a Bothan male. His fur mostly black with patches of tan, including one patch surrounding his eyes, that gave him the appearance of a mask wearer being broadcast in negative.
"Who are you? How did you get this frequency and access code?"
Lumaya finished her grape before turning her attention to the hologram.
"I am a humble daughter of a noble house, and I obtained these things by paying a fortune to the correct people. And you are Tathak Karoylan, deputy intelligence leader for the esteemed world of Barthui."
"So, you have my attention, briefly."
Lumaya smiled.
"I will say things. You do not have to confirm or deny them. Then I will give you my frequency and access code. After this message ends, I suspect you will speak with your superiors and then, eventually, initiate a return communication."
"Go ahead."
Karoylan was professionally civil.
"The Barthans are preparing three fleets for an assault on Galactic Alliance forces,"
Lumaya said.
"A just response to what you have suffered at their hands, including a series of assassinations of key Bothan personnel on Coruscant. But your planners are impeded because it will be impossible to launch the fleets from the Bothui system and the other origin points without being detected, and probably shadowed by Galactic Alliance forces. This eliminates your ability to perform surprise attacks."
The Bothan shrugged, looking at her as though he hadn't recognized a single term she'd used.
"So," she continued, "I am communicating to inform you that I can blind the GA observers and give you the opportunity of, 10 to 20 standard hours in which to deploy your forces without being detected. Of course, to do this, I would have to have information sources planted deep within the GA government. And I do. I shall prove this by providing you with some information. Free, useful information."
She modulated her voice, making it lower, more sultry.
"Favio, transmit the package."
The computer's voice responded.
"At once, mistress." "The files now coming on your displays,"
Lumaya continued,
"are from the internal records of the Galactic Alliance Guard. They include details on the assassinations I mentioned a moment ago. By details, I mean details that the Holonews services never had. Exact times, places, and methods of assassination. Personal items the victims were carrying. What the victims were doing before they were killed, including recordings of their conversations and transmissions. Things that only the killers and their superiors could possess.
The fur rippled on Koroilan's snout, just for a moment. It could have been nothing more than an itch. Lumaya admired his self-control. As cold-blooded as Bothans could be about such matters, Koroilan could well have lost friends to this spree of assassination, and probably had.
Irrespective of your earlier statements about imagined Bothan military activity, if these files turn out to be accurate, you will earn our thanks. They will be most useful when we prosecute the killer or killers.
You are welcome.
Lumaya gave him a nod, pure Hapen condescension.
Now I will go about other duties. The last file transmitted has information on how and when to reach me, should you need to.
The Bothan opened his mouth to reply, but his hologram suddenly disappeared. Lumaya's computer, primed to end the transmission when she made a specific statement, had done so.
Elmas Private Spaceport, Coronet Corellia, Lounge of the Love Commander.
The insertion onto Corellia had not been as difficult a task as Leia and the others had feared. They'd maintained a high orbit near a cluster of Alliance vessels, nervously waiting for their intelligence authorization to be revealed as a fake, until they had detected a small task force forming up. It consisted of a sensor-heavy shuttle, several starfighters, and a couple of bombers, obviously intended to make one or more reconnaissance passes over the planet's surface. Playing on their intelligence authorization, Han had calmed in, requesting permission to accompany the task force down into the atmosphere.
Sure, had come the mission commander's reply. But if you get blown up, you can't expect us to come back and pick up the pieces.
So they had flown down at the tail end of the task force, had waited until a squadron of Corellian TIE fighters had fallen on the force, and had broken away, using terrain-following flying, as terrifying with Leia at the controls as it would have been with Han doing the honors, until they were well clear of the engagement zone and pursuit. Now, hours later, they waited in a hangar that cost a fortune to rent, but came with the scant protection offered by one smuggler when renting to another. Han's old contacts continued to pay off, so long as Lando was willing to pay out. They waited for nightfall and the covering darkness it would bring, as slight as that might be in the heart of the city, and reviewed recent news broadcasts. One that was often cycled showed Wedge Antilles at his retirement announcement.
He'd never retire at a time like this, Leia said, so he's being forced out.
Lando smoothed his false beard.
But is he being forced out because he didn't approve of the attack on Tenel Ka, or because it was his plan and it failed?
Han snorted.
He put his career on the line to retake Trollis with a minimum of casualties. That old mess at Hapes couldn't have been his plan. Didn't work the way he thinks.
But he'll know who was responsible, Lando said. I think we should ask him.
Han and Leia exchanged a glance.
It may not be as easy as that, Leia said. We've already tried to reach him by comlink. All we got was a recorded message saying that he and his family were celebrating his retirement by going on vacation. Not where, not for how long. No information on how to reach him.
Who would know?
Their best friends are on the other side, Leia said. Tycho and Winter Selchu.
Han frowned.
He's leaving Corellia.
Leia and Lando both looked at him. Lando looked confused, as if Han had been using stepping stones to cross a stream, and Lando couldn't spot the stones to follow him.
How do you figure that? Lando asked. His home is here.
Han irritably waved the notion away.
His home is the military. For him, Corellia is just a good place to retire. He didn't even grow up on planet. He grew up on a refueling station that doesn't exist anymore. No, he's got to get off world. He's in disgrace with his former bosses. Bosses who assassinate. And he's not going to leave his family vulnerable to them.
He considered for a moment.
He'll be in hiding now. What we'd have to do is figure out how he's going to get off world, assuming he hasn't already, and meet up with him. And that would be a lot of work. Denjak's Tepler may have no power, but he's been friendly before and may know something. Let's see if we can get to him.
Coronet Corellia.
In the quietest hours of the morning, the three of them huddled around a small table in the most private sort of cantina. The table Han, Leia, and Lando sat at was toward the back of the main room, where the thousand colorful rays of light from above the bar decorations and along the wall glow rods fell only dimly. They had a good angle on the door, and looked up every time someone entered the cantina. And this time, they didn't instantly dismiss the new customer as a prospect. The glow rods above the door showed him to be wrapped in a cloak, its hood casting his face into deep shadow. He stood there as the door swung shut behind him and scanned the bar's interior. Not sure whether this was Tepler's intermediary, Han straightened, made a look-at-me motion, and caught the new customer's attention. The man walked over, and without invitation, sat on the table's fourth chair. He didn't lower his hood, but at this distance, Han recognized Denjax Tepler. Han cocked an eyebrow at him.
Isn't it risky for you to travel alone? I thought for sure you'd send a Rodian with a scar and a limp to escort us to a secret hideaway.
Tepler snorted.
All my hideaways are being monitored, as I am. But a while back I hired a lookalike. My surveillance follows him home, meaning I can sometimes walk around freely.
With no bodyguards, Leia said. Tepler nodded.
Yeah.
He looked up as a waiter droid, a cylinder on wheels with eight arms rolled up.
Whiskey and water, he said, making his voice hoarse. Pre-war.
The droid rolled away, and Tepler returned his attention to the others, particularly Lando.
I don't know you.
Lando extended his hand.
Lando Calrissian.
Tepler shook it.
Nice to meet you, though I think you picked a bad time to come out of retirement.
Just as you picked a bad time to go into politics.
True.
Tepler turned back to Han and Leia.
So, why am I here?
The attack on Queen Mother Tenel Ka, Leia said.
Ah. First, Han said, did you have anything to do with it?
Tepler shook his head.
Or know anything about it? Not until it was underway. Durgegen was the chief planner for and signed off on the mission to kill the Queen Mother Tenel Ka.
Leia nodded. And it was an assassination mission, not a kidnapping attempt?
If they grabbed her, they would have killed her.
Leia pressed on.
Wedge Antilles?
He didn't know about it. He was ordered to step down because he didn't support waging a war that dirty.
Leia felt a little trickle of alarm, but it seemed remote, not directed at her. Closing her eyes, she extended her awareness through the Force to areas beyond her immediate surroundings, through the ceiling and floors, walls on all sides. Outside the front door and wall, she found outrage. Someone wanting to come in, but being prevented. More than one someone. A gradual massing of bodies. She opened her eyes. The waiter droid was just rolling up. She asked the droid, "What's immediately beneath us?"
"That would be the storage and distillery rooms, my lady. We no longer do tours of our micro-distillery, but the floor is available for rent for private parties, holodrama recordings."
"Quiet," Leia said. "Han, Lando, door." The front door slammed open, and two Corsec agents in battle armor, carrying blaster rifles, were the first ones through it. Han's blaster cleared its holster, and Lando tripped the table over toward the intruders, providing cover. Han shot the first intruder in the chest armor. The blast didn't penetrate, but the impact knocked the man backward into a new wave of Corsec enforcers trying to get through the door. Tepler dived behind the table, switching his tumbler to his left hand, drawing his own holdout blaster with his right. He fired over the table edge. His shot hit the glowing street sign over the door, incinerating it, raining sparks down on the intruders jammed there. Leia ignited her lightsaber. She spun to crouch behind the table, then plunged the glowing blade into the floor. She began to drag it around in a wide circle. Lando extracted his blaster from beneath the folds of his hip cloak. He brought it up parallel with Han's and fired. Leia finished her sweep with the lightsaber, and a rough circle of flooring a meter and a half in diameter dropped away into darkness, rattling against a hard surface a moment later. "Let's go," she said, making it sound like a suggestion, and dropped through. Her lightsaber lit her new surroundings. She was in a darkened, narrow corridor.
Lando looked at Han. "You first."
He took another shot at the doorway, catching a Corsec trooper in the second rank right on the kneecap. Han gestured for Lando to go.
Age before beauty.
Idiots. Tepler dropped through, landing awkwardly behind Leia. Lando slid through the hole. He kept his cane from colliding with anything, but his hip cloak caught on the edge of the hole and was yanked free off his shoulders. He landed gracefully and glared up at his traitorous garment. Then he trotted after Leia. Han grabbed one table leg and fell through the hole, hauling the leg with him. All four table legs dropped into the hole, leaving the tabletop flush against the floor. The awkwardness of his descent caused him to hit the corridor floor hard and go to his knees, but he rose unhurt and sprinted after the others, guided by the glow-rod-like qualities of Leia's lightsaber. Han rounded a corner and caught up with the others. Leia stood at the top of a short permacrete ramp. A metal door barred her way. She slashed at the top hinge of three, cutting through it. Tepler stood behind her, calm, blaster at the ready. Lando, like a catalog hollow of elegant indifference, leaned against the wall, twirling his cane. There were more blaster shots from back the way they'd come. Han heard pieces of wood raining down into the corridor. Leia finished the second hinge and got to work on the third. Tepler stepped forward and raised his arm to catch the top of the door when it toppled. The door fell. Tepler wrenched it out of the way, and it clattered to the permacrete floor. On the other side, the ramp continued up. Several meters beyond it, Han could see speeders roaring past what had to be the end of the alley behind the cantina. He, Leia, and Tepler ran toward the escape the street represented. Lando remained behind, to delay pursuit, Han assumed. Leia extinguished her lightsaber as they reached the alley mouth. A narrow sidewalk gave them an avenue for escape. The cross-traffic just a few centimeters away roared past, the speeders running lights leaving colorful horizontal streaks in the air. Han looked at the situation. This was going to turn into either a running blaster battle or a blaster battle performed on stolen speeders.
Ready to go, sweetheart?
Elmas Private Spaceport, Coronet Corellia, Rental Bay 601208.
Dad, something's happening outside.
Instantly awake, still dressed in a jumpsuit, not much improved by having been worked in for a day, Wedge rolled out of his cot and joined his daughter, Miri, at the hangar's side viewport. The viewport was mostly covered in black sheeting, in which Miri and his wife, Ayella, had cut strategic holes for viewing. The interior of the hangar was in darkness, so it took his eyes no time to adjust. Across the accessway between rows of rental hangars, three people were making a hurried approach. They stopped well short of Wedge's hangar and clustered around a personnel door two hangars down.
"Not our problem," Wedge said, rubbing his eyes. He'd gotten to sleep only an hour or two earlier, after a long session of performing vehicle repairs and maintenance.
Miri had been right to awaken him, but he was anxious to get back to sleep.
"I think it is."
The voice was Corin Horn's, from just behind Wedge, and Wedge started. He turned to offer Corin a mock glare.
"Ex-Corsec and Jedi makes you twice as sneaky. What makes you think it's a problem? You can't even see out there."
"But I can feel."
Corin gestured toward the distant arrivals.
"One of them is Leia Solo."
Wedge whipped around and put his eye to the peephole again. The three people had disappeared, presumably having gone through the door.
"You're sure?"
"I'm sure."
"What's all the noise?"
Stumbling down the boarding ramp of the Pulsar Skate, her Baudu-class yacht, covering a yawn and half-smothering her words with one hand, was Mirax Horn, Corin's wife and Miri's namesake. Wedge had known her for decades. She was the daughter of Booster Tarek, Wedge's mentor in the smuggling trade back in the days before Wedge joined the Rebel Alliance. Round-faced, with black hair cut in a short, practical style, she retained much of the fresh-faced, blue-eyed beauty that had characterized her when she and Wedge were both teenagers.
"Leia's two doors down with two strange men," Wedge said.
"How do you know they're two strange men?"
Mirax asked.
"It might be Han and Luke."
"Han and Luke are two strange men."
Wedge looked around the people assembled before him. Only Ayella was still horizontal, on her cot beneath the S-foil of Wedge's X-Wing. She had pulled her pillow over her head to muffle all the conversational noise.
In a couple of minutes, when they've had time to relax, we'll send someone over.
Me? Miri said. I'm the only one whose face isn't all over Corsex or Assassin's Shoot on sight guides.
Corrin gave her a melancholy little smile.
It's not going to happen, girl.
Uncle Corrin, if you're going to give me the same old you're too young argument...
Corrin cut her off with a gesture and a shake of his head.
Listen.
Everyone did. They could all hear the rush of thrusters and repulsor lifts. Wedge found it curious that he couldn't identify the speeder from its engine noise. Then he realized why. He wasn't listening to one speeder close by, but to several farther away, their engine and thruster noises blending together and echoing off hangar walls. And the noise was getting louder, closer.
Aiella, Wedge called. Everyone, set up for immediate evacuation.
Corellia, control cabin of the Love Commander.
Power coming online in 2 minutes,
Leia announced. Lando tried to keep his dissatisfaction from his face.
I hate transports with slow startup times, he grumbled. If that idiot had had any sense, he'd have installed a 10-second starter.
If he'd had any sense, he wouldn't have lost his yacht to you, Han said. Relax. We have plenty of time.
Through the front viewports, they could all see the line of sparks appear at the hangar door as a laser cutting tool outside sheared through the locking mechanism. The door rolled open, and half a dozen Corsec agents charged in. Just outside, making the final turn to aim at the Love Commander, was an old, though doubtless still deadly, TIE crawler. The ball-shaped cockpit, familiar from TIE fighters, was mounted between two low rectangular sets of tank treads, and Lando could see the machine's twin blaster cannon barrels trained squarely on Love Commander's control cabin. A Corsec officer with an oversized comlink held up before his face entered with his men. His words came across Love Commander's comm board, and magnified could even be heard through the yacht's hull.
This is Corellian Security. Power down and exit your craft immediately for identification.
Leia, stall them, Lando ordered. We can get our shields online in just over a minute.
Leia shook her head.
No, they're serious. They'll open fire before then. We can surrender now and escape while we're being transported.
Han's lip had twitched when the word surrender was uttered, and now he shook his head.
Princess, we...
There was an engine roar from outside. All the Corsec agents still outside looked to their right. Some of them ran, into the hangar and toward Love Commander, or out of sight of the access way. Anywhere that wasn't toward the TIE crawler. A flash of red light hit the crawler's starboard treads. Low, almost at the level of the permacrete. The shot flipped the crawler, and it rolled, coming down resting on one of its treads. A starfighter flashed by outside.
That was an X-Wing, wasn't it? Lando asked.
Leia nodded.
Wedge?
Han shook his head.
Emerald green with a checkerboard pattern.
Leia smiled.
Corrin!
Then an X-Wing in standard gray with red piping flashed by.
Power? Lando asked.
Leia checked her status board.
Coming online in 3, 2, 1, now!
Shields up! Lando ordered. Get us out of here!
Coruscant, Jedi Temple.
Ben's opponent wasn't particularly impressive. The droid had a scrawny body, its four spindly legs just sturdy enough to allow it to walk around. Its two arms ended not in hands, but in tubes about 8 centimeters in diameter. And its head was huge, the size of an entire R2 unit, with two green glowing optical sensors where eyes would be, and a set of speaker vents in the position of a human mouth. In the mirror that ran the full length of the chamber on one wall, they seemed unlikely combatants. A droid with a ludicrously large head and a friendly-looking teenage boy with bright red hair in a Buzz-style haircut.
Last series. Ready.
To better test himself, Ben left his lightsaber off for the moment and turned his back on the droid.
Ready.
There was a ponk noise as the first foam steel ball left one of the droid's arm tubes. And that, Ben felt, as a displacement of air, as a little tickle of worry. He could sense the direction of the ball's travel straight toward the back of his head. He swung around, sidestepping the ball's path, igniting the lightsaber as second, third, and fourth balls shot out toward him.
He swung at the first one, but his blade was only half extended, and his strike was half a meter short of its target. The second ball shot harmlessly past him, but he connected with the third and fourth, sending them ricocheting away from him. Their glossy exteriors took the momentary contact with a coherent light blade without melting or deforming. Then more balls came pouring from the droid's arms. Ponk, 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 ponk. The droid varied its aim, firing at Ben's feet, chest, head, arms, aiming at positions bracketing Ben in case his dodging moved him into their path. He didn't deflect all of them. One cracked painfully into his left knee. Another grazed his cheek. But his success ratio was pretty high. He could feel the balls moving around behind him along the gleaming Apakia hardwood floor. They separated into two streams, circling around him back toward the droid, controlled by the magnetic impulses it was sending. As Ben watched and deflected two more balls, the first ones that had been sent against him reached the base of the droid, flew up to hover above the droid's head, and dropped into the slot there. Back in the hopper, they could be fired at him again. On impulse, Ben chose one of the balls now approaching the droid and reached out to it through the Force. He stomped with his foot, physicalizing the way he wanted to direct his attack, and lashed out with Force energy. The ball flattened, becoming a disc wider than but about half as tall as it had been before. It still flew up to hover above the droid's head, and when it dropped toward the slot, Ben gave it some extra energy. It hit the slot and half-folded, jamming into place. Swatting away at the next four balls, Ben watched as half a dozen more dropped onto the droid's head, bounced off the ruined ball, fell to the floor, and rolled around to get to the backs of the two lines of balls awaiting retrieval. No more balls emerged from the droid. Ben waited, watching as expended balls from the two lines flew up over the droid, bounced off, fell to the ground, and got back in line again. Then that action, too, ceased. Released from magnetic control, most of the balls now stayed where they lay. A few rolled a handspan in one direction or another before coming to a stop. Ben felt the tiniest of tugs against his lightsaber. He gripped it hard just before it tried to yank itself out of his hand. It struggled with him, attempting to fly to the droid, but he got his left hand on it as well and held firm. He deactivated it and grinned at the practice droid. Finally, the lightsaber, too, stopped trying to move on its own. The droid said,
"Have you sabotaged me?"
"Yes," Ben said, "in, the spirit of defeating an enemy."
"I shall file your actions under tactics, then. I designate this exercise complete. Last series success ratio 94%. Last series ended at 22% of balls expended due to tactical sabotage. Learner weapon retention successful."
The droid rolled toward the door out of the training hall, and the balls now returning to the straight line formations rolled out after it. Leaving, the droid passed another Jedi learner waiting beside the door. She must have entered while Ben was in the midst of the last exercise, and he recognized with a little flash of embarrassment that he hadn't detected her. He had been too focused on his task. She was several centimeters taller than he was, 3 or 4 years older, and redheaded. Her long hair a shade more coppery than his mother's. She came forward as the balls continued to roll out of the hall.
"Hello."
"Hello." Ben returned his lightsaber to his belt hook. She extended a hand.
"I'm Saha. Saha Dorvald."
"I know." He took her hand to shake it. There was something in her hand. Something small and rectangular. A card of some sort. But her expression didn't change. She didn't acknowledge that she just handed him anything. A little thrill shot through Ben. He knew why. First, she was really good-looking. And she was talking to him. Second, she'd just done something covert. He wondered what was on the card. Instructions to meet her somewhere? A communication from the government of Corellia, begging his help to resolve the military crisis? An offer of a bribe? He'd just been kicked out of a practice session straight into a holodrama, and he keenly felt the transition. On the walk back to his quarters, Ben thought about what to do. He stopped in at a playroom set aside for Rontos, students 3 to 5 years younger than Ben. There were no children or adults present, but there were games and toys scattered here and there among the cushiony chairs and other brightly colored items of furniture. As he knew there must be, there were data pads, most of them with larger controls suited to smaller, clumsier fingers, and one of them had a privacy headset. He took it. He stepped into a closet used to hold cleaning supplies. standing in the narrow gap between shelves holding pungent-smelling bottles and plasteel containers. He opened the datapad and quickly stripped out its communications chip. He felt nervous doing this anywhere in the temple, but didn't think that even if he was under near-constant observation, they could have put holocams everywhere. Not in a cleaning supply closet, surely not. Later, in his quarters, he moved his chair so that he could sit with his back to a corner. He made a slightly exaggerated show of selecting a game card from his small collection of entertainments. He was sitting down, he palmed the game card and inserted Saha's instead. Then he donned the headset and accessed the card. The Galactic Alliance Guard logo came up with a brief message. Special Agent Ben Skywalker, enter access code. Ben typed in the password he used in the GAG offices to access messages and orders. The message changed to ask, sound mode for secure surroundings or text mode for public areas? He chose sound. The screen flickered, and Jason's image came up. Ben, Jason said, his voice a little thin over the headset speakers.
This is important. Memorize the information on this card. Replay it if necessary. Once you're sure you have it memorized, destroy the chip. Don't just break it, destroy it, irretrievably.
He paused as if to give Ben time to absorb the gravity of his words. Ben felt that thrill again. This is real. This is important.
I need to send you on a mission. You specifically, because it has to be someone with the GAG interests, my interests at heart. Someone who is Force-sensitive, and someone who has proven that he can operate alone. That's you or me, and I can't leave my duties at this time. I'm sorry about interrupting your training, and sorrier still that this may cause friction between you and your parents, but I'll make them understand this was all my doing. Here's the essential core of the mission. Remember it, so that if anything goes wrong with the operational details I give you, you'll remember what's most important. You are to acquire the Amulet of Kalara, and secretly bring it to me.
The image switched to a standard planetary data screen, with the name Almania at the top. Jason's voice continued.
The amulet is on the planet of Almania, in the planetary offices of Tendrondo Arms. It resides in a display case on the 215th floor of their office building. Security in the building is nothing special, since it's shared by hundreds of different firms, and security on the display case is also poor, because the owner doesn't know what he possesses.
The image changed to a close-up view of a jewel hanging from a silver chain. The jewel was a gray oval, its surface knobby and textured rather than smooth. In the center of the face was a vertical bar of some ruby-like gem, flanked by a lustrous black semi-precious stone. The effect was rather like looking at a silvery feline eye with a red slitted pupil.
This is the Amulet of Kalara. Now, the important thing. Ben, if this gets into the hands of a Force-sensitive who knows the secrets of its activation, we're all in trouble. Because while such a person has it activated, he will be invisible in the Force. Even his use of the Force is invisible to other Force users. Think about what that means. He'll be like one of the Yuuzhan Vong warriors, but can be a normal person. Human, Rodian, Bith, whatever. He would be a tremendous danger to your parents, the Order, me, everyone, and everything. If you find the amulet in its display case, wonderful. We're going to give you a replacement to leave for the real thing. Mission accomplished. But if anyone gets his hands on it...
The image switched back to Jason, and he was even more grave than before.
You have to assume that he knows its secret, that he's a powerful dark Jedi or other Force-sensitive, and that he can activate it at any moment. Ben, you have to eliminate him before he eliminates you. I'm sorry, but it's true.
A weight settled in Ben's stomach. What Jason was suggesting sounded like, under the right circumstances, it could be murder. But if the amulet was what Jason said, it had to be put in the right hands. Had to be.
So, at any point in the next 2 nights, you need to visit the temple's fourth-level exercise changing room. Open the leftmost locker, combination 686, and retrieve the packet of clothes and other items there.
Kuat System, aboard the Love Commander.
Establish communications, Lando said.
I really think, Leia said, you're letting this whole captain thing go to your head.
Lando gave her a long, thoughtful look.
You're right, dearest Leia, friend of decades.